Thanks for joining us on the JX today. Student loans are topic number one. The school year is ending for just about everyone, but the students getting ready for college in the fall may still be trying to line up finances for tuition. With interest rates on all loans up, it's no surprise to find that student loans have hiked a bit too. Let's get a guide to college loans from the beginning. Brian Walsh is a certified financial planner and student loan expert. He's head of advice and planning at the online bank SoFi. Welcome, Brian.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is apparently a good time of year to talk about this. I mean, when do the college loan applications, when does that cycle peak?
Yeah, typically that'll peak shortly before school gets into session. So probably the last couple weeks of July, early August, right before students really kind of get to campus.
Okay, so we really are kind of heading into the crescendo of the loan season.
Exactly. And I think for people going through this process, it's important to start early, not only on planning out, okay, what's my financial aid? What are my expenses going to be? Building that budget to take out the right loan amount. It's also important to give yourself some time so that way you can shop around and compare the different options that you have available.
Well, let's talk about those options, though, because honestly, it's been a while since I sought out a student loan for myself. What's the range? What's the suite of stuff available to people?
So for the most part, what we see with families who, let's say, kids going to undergrad would be they start to use a federal direct loan, either subsidized or unsubsidized loan. First and foremost, they'll find out what they're eligible for in their financial aid package. And though the problem with those is they have limits on how much you can borrow depending on your year in school. And then assuming families need to borrow more than those limits to pay for school, then really the decision is between, do you take out a loan in the parent's name through the federal government, or do you take out a loan in the student's name and just have the parents co-sign with a private loan? And really the decision there ends up being, who do you want to be primarily responsible for paying that loan back in the future? And then also any differences in interest rates, because well-qualified borrowers may be able to get a lower rate with a private lender than what they could get through the federal government, since everyone gets the same rate across the board.
What is that federal rate now?
So the federal rate for the in upcoming school year is about 6.5% for undergrad loans, and then for the parent loans, looking at right around
9%. 9%. These are rather high, I would think. These are actually higher than mortgage rates.
Yeah, so when it comes to student loans, typically what you'll see is the interest rates from the federal perspective are set once a year for the entire school year, and then that interest rate stays in place for the life of the loan. You'll also see a little bit of a lag with those interest rates, where when rates first started going up, the interest rate on federal student loans was kind of locked in for the summer for the entire school year. So it was really, kind of appealing to people. Now with interest rates, by and large, people expect cuts towards, the tail end of this year, early next year. That won't be reflected in the federal loan rates until those loans for the following school year.
So they won't budge for this academic year, no matter what happens to the interest rates. Whatever the Fed decides to do is not going to affect the federal student loan rate.
Exactly. It's set once a year, and it's for that academic year, so for 2024-2025 academic year.
Well, we are learning a lot so far. Brian Walsh is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a certified student loan expert and certified financial planner. If you've got questions or comments about student loans, join us with your emails to jx@jeffnet.org. Talk about things like the amounts borrowed. I mean, you just borrow for a year at a time, but it sounds like several families have perhaps multiple loans. They get to the federal limit and then they get additional loans.
Exactly. And I think really the starting point for all this is, assuming where you're going to school, it's really going through and finding out, okay, what's the tuition cost? What are the books? What am I going to be paying for room and board? Any sort of incidentals, and building out that budget as early as possible. Because when you have a budget, you're going to know, number one, how much do I actually need to pay for the upcoming school year? And then number two, it really forces you to be realistic and practical with how much money you're going to be spending throughout the school year. What we see is if families don't do that collaboratively with the student, then it can be really tempting to take out a little bit extra to have a cushion. And ultimately that money could be wasted. And then eventually you have to pay it back once you graduate and you start your working career.
All right. So we were talking about the difference in the rates between the loans that that the parents co-sign versus the ones that are in the student's name. Based on just the rate alone, I mean, do you have most people going for the student loans?
You know, to be honest with you, it depends. When it comes to private lenders and private loans, you have to qualify with that lender. So number one, whether or not you can get it, even with a co-signer, is going to be based on their underwriting process. So they'll look at, you know, income, they'll look at free cash flow, they'll look at credit score. So people who are, you know, well-qualified borrowers could qualify for a lower rate. People who are average borrowers might be right there in the middle. So it is really kind of dependent on that. And the reason you have to do underwriting for private lenders is they don't have the, I guess, the flexibility that the federal government has to loan out money and when it comes to assessing risk and getting repaid.
So I'm curious, though, I mean, for students to be able to qualify for loans without a parent co-signing, does that happen much? I mean, do they have to have developed some sort of credit rating or have an account with a bank they're borrowing from?
Yeah, I would say it is not typical for especially undergraduate students to get a private student loan just in their name without a co-signer for the points that you mentioned. I mean, income, credit score, things like that. We do see it much more for people that maybe go back to school later in their working career or people who go back to school to get a graduate degree. That's where we would tend to see private student loans in the student's name.
All right, so let's talk about the interest rates again, because I'm curious to know over the life of a loan, because you can spend a long time paying these back. I mean, how much difference would a single percentage point make in what a borrower pays back on, say, $30,000 over the life of that loan?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head right there. I think a lot of people underestimate the impact of small changes. And I would say it doesn't even need to be a full percentage different in the interest rate to have a big impact when you're talking about $30,000, $50,000. I mean, on a regular basis, working with, you know, individual members, we see six-figure loan balances on a consistent basis. So if you look at that, that really can add up, whether it even be a 0.25% lower interest rate on a student loan, which is not only important when you're, you know, deciding what loan do I take out initially, but even for people who are repaying their student loans. Let's say they graduated a few years ago, looking and saying, okay, can I lower my rate even slightly? And then doing the math to say, okay, how much money will that save me on interest? Sometimes you're talking a few hundred bucks. Sometimes you're talking thousands of dollars in savings over the life of the loan.
We're talking to Brian Walsh, a certified student loan expert, certified financial planner, head of advice and planning at SoFi. We're talking about student loans, student loan interest rates, and a whole lot more. If you have questions or comments to share, join us by email, jx@jeffnet.org. A lot of people getting student loans this time of year, it sounds like. I'm curious, when you talk about seeing six-figure balances on a consistent basis, at some point do people top out? I mean, is our limit set by lenders? They'll say, nope, we're not going to give you money for a loan because you have this much balance in outstanding loans already?
Yeah, really the balances that are available are going to be primarily driven based on the cost of attendance. So if you're going to, let's say, a very expensive private school, then you would ultimately be able to borrow more money than if you're going to a more cost-effective school or maybe you're receiving more financial aid. A lot of times when we see very large student loan balances where you see it on news or it kind of catches your eye, those are people going back to get graduate degrees or even people going to medical school just because the cost of attendance is much higher to get those types of degrees.
And then just some nuts and bolts here, Brian. How much waiting time usually between application and notification of funding or not?
Yeah, so depending on the institution you're working with, it can be a fairly quick process. So I can speak, you know, firsthand from a SoFi perspective, it's an entirely digital process. So you go on there and you can actually check your rate and see what things would look like with a soft credit check. So they're not even pulling your full credit report and it doesn't go on your credit report. And you could see, okay, if all this information does check out that I provided, what would the rate be? How much could I borrow? What are my repayment options? And you could see that in a matter of minutes. Then when it comes to actually funding that loan, then that can take, you know, sometimes a little bit longer, you know, let's say a few weeks where the money actually goes to the institution that you're going to be attending and kind of working through that process with the institution.
And what is the approval rate on student loan applications? I mean, we hear of so many people and so much debt out there. Is anybody really refused?
So there will be people who are refused, and that's going to vary lender to lender. Some lenders are going to have more strict underwriting guidelines. Maybe they focus on different sort of risks than other lenders. Realistically, if you look at federal student loans, that's where you don't have to really worry about going through underwriting, especially on like the subsidized and unsubsidized loans for the students. It's really the private student loans where you know, really start worrying about underwriting and whether or not that's going to be a possibility.
Okay, so the federal ones are the easier ones to get. Are there limits on how much you can take in a federal loan? You said there are some limits on borrowing there.
There are limits on borrowing, and that's going to depend on your year of school and whether or not you would have access to other types of loans. So typically we'll see those, you know, early in a college journey, you know, $6,000-$7,000 a year, and then that'll gradually increase as the years in school increases as well. So we do see a lot of times that sounds like a lot of money, but at the end of the day, that's most of the time not going to be entirely what families need to pay for the cost of attending a college. And that's where either the parent loans or the private student loans come into play.
Specific to this year, we've been hearing a lot in the news about problems with FAFSA, the federal form. Is that a component here? Is that the only component? Is it one of several that people are going to be required to fill out in order to get their loans?
Yeah, in order to be eligible for federal student loans, you will have needed to complete the FAFSA. And there was a little bit of a rocky transition period as that process got updated. Everything has been ironed out since that point in time. I know it was we heard frustrations from parents who were going through the experience with the delays and the extra things they had to deal with. But yes, even if you think, hey, I make too much money for my child to qualify for financial aid, filling out the FAFSA ultimately makes you eligible for federal student loans. So it ends up being an important part of the overall process.
And for the folks wondering, FAFSA is the free application for federal student aid. If you're about 40 years out of college like me, you remember that as the FAF, the financial aid form. Things change. The assumption that loans will be needed, Brian, I'm only curious about this. I mean, do students leave other forms of financial aid on the table?
Sometimes they do leave other forms of financial aid on the table. I would say the most common one that I see is work study, where let's say you have your financial aid package after applying and you go through, some of that money is going to be free money in the form of grants and scholarships. Some of that money is going to be money you have to repay with federal student loans. And then some of that money would be money that you have to earn through, let's say, an on-campus job, and you have a certain amount that you can earn via work study. And I think that's one of the pieces that I think gets overlooked by people when they're attending, because it may not seem like a ton of money, but every dollar that you don't borrow is more than a dollar that you don't have to pay back down the road. So that's an area that we typically encourage families to make sure that they stay on top of.
What are you seeing in terms of numbers on how long after graduation it takes people to finish off paying off their student loans?
Yeah, that's really going to vary, to be completely honest with you, based on how much they borrowed and ultimately how much they're earning when they graduate. We see some people who are very aggressive in repaying their student loans that get those paid off within, you know, 5 to 7 years of graduating. On the flip side, we see people who borrowed a large amount of money compared to their income, and they need to do some sort of income-driven repayment option through federal loans where it's based on a percentage of your income that stretches out 15, 20, 25 years, which is why I think it's so important on the front end to be honest about, okay, what major am I going into? What's the earning potential with that? And that should be a baseline for how much you're willing to borrow, because if you don't do that and you have large student loan debt compared to income, it really puts you in a more challenged spot financially once you graduate.
All right, so definitely think of a budget for the year in college ahead, but then think beyond that too to what your income and expenditures are going to be like on the other end. A lot to think about here as you get into a student loan. Brian Walsh is a certified student loan expert, certified financial planner, head of advice and planning at SoFi. Thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.